On this 19th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks, the presidential candidates, their running mates, and their spouses are attending remembrances for the nearly 3,000 people who died. This morning, President Trump spoke in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, where one of the planes hijacked on 9/11 crashed after passengers fought to take it back.
The heroes of Flight 93 are an everlasting reminder that no matter the danger, no matter the threat, no matter the odds, America will always rise up, stand tall, and fight back.
Let's bring in our Friday Politics Roundtable. Joining us today, Aaron Haynes, editor-at-large of The 19th. That's a newsroom focusing on gender, politics, and policy. And Sahil Kapoor, national political reporter at NBC. Welcome to both of you. Sahil, it has been 19 years since 9/11. Are you surprised by how little terrorism and national security have figured into the campaign so far this year?
It's great to be back. I'm not surprised that foreign policy isn't a major issue in the election, for the main reason that when the economy is weak, when there's a recession, that tends to be the biggest thing on the minds of voters. Now we have that and a massive deadly pandemic that's been sweeping through the nation and the world that has killed over 190,000 Americans. So it doesn't surprise me that foreign policy doesn't, that foreign policy isn't on the isn't high on the list of voter concerns. And we see that reflected on the campaign trail. It simply isn't a focal point of issues discussed by either President Trump or Joe Biden.
Aaron, though, on the issue of foreign policy, I think Sahil's absolutely right. It's not a main focus for most people. But what about for members of the military? This week, President Trump announced that he was reducing the number of U.S. troops still left in Iraq from 5,200 to 3,500. He has been campaigning on ending endless wars. And of course, he was in the news recently for his reported comments calling fallen soldiers losers and suckers. In terms of members of the military, is their support going to be critical in this election?
The military has been front and center in this election, even as 9/11 and issues of kind of terrorism and foreign security have not necessarily been at the forefront. But I think that, issues from, whether we're talking about violence against women in the military or the president's recent comments, about the military, those reports have absolutely factored into how military veterans, service members, and their family are thinking about how they want to vote. And I think that both campaigns are aware of this. Joe Biden certainly has been talking about his support for the military as well as he's been out on the campaign trail. But, I think I'm struck, honestly, 19 years after 9/11, this anniversary is just another reminder of how divided we are as a country, particularly in this pandemic. When we, started back in March, it was a message of we're all in this together. And now we're wondering, whether masks are political and if our neighbors actually care about our health and safety. It really is just kind of putting back on the radar how our politics couldn't be more polarized and questions of who gets to be an American are raised every day.
Sahil, on that point of the coronavirus, for 2 days now, President Trump has tried to push back on the news in Bob Woodward's new book that he, the president, knew how deadly the coronavirus was back in February and that he wanted to downplay the dangers in public, he says, because he didn't want to panic people. Your thoughts on the revelations this week? This is a president who regularly uses fear to motivate people, and now he's saying, well, he didn't want to scare people. What do you make of all that?
These are legitimately painful revelations for President Trump because they show him on audio saying something very different privately than he was saying publicly. Privately, he knew that this was a deadly virus, that it was much worse than the flu, and that it was going to be very, very tricky to deal with. Publicly, he was downplaying it. He was comparing it to the flu. And he even says that he was actively trying to downplay it. Now, why was he doing that? He claims it's because he didn't want to stoke panic. That is a little odd to hear from a president who regularly stokes panic as part of his political brand and often does it, in an attempt to gain political support. And the examples of that include we can see them just now. He's making, you know, dramatized claims such as the suburbs will be abolished if he's defeated. No real evidence for that. He's claiming that the election would be rigged because of mail-in ballots rising substantially this year. Experts say there's no evidence for that. And it's also a dangerous claim because it could undermine faith in the election. He's talked in the past about Latin American refugees being actually gang members overrunning the border. So this is not a president who steers clear of stoking panic and the notion that he would be doing that on the coronavirus. I'm skeptical that voters will buy that. He ranks underwater on his approval of his, you know, handling of the coronavirus by an average of about 15 points in the polls. This is his single biggest vulnerability heading into the election.
Aaron, what do you think? Are the American people incapable of handling the truth about the coronavirus?
No. And in fact, you're seeing so many people saying that they would have appreciated, knowing the gravity and the seriousness of the coronavirus, sounding the alarm or scaring the American people is not the same as informing the American people. And what we know, I mean, this was not just downplaying the pandemic. It was misleading because there were two very disparate messages we know now between what President Trump was saying at the podium and what he was saying privately to Bob Woodward. And for the Biden campaign, I think we're seeing that this is underscoring their message that this election is a referendum on President Trump, who they are saying has failed to respond to the coronavirus pandemic. You saw the Biden campaign immediately cutting an ad featuring the president's remarks, and they have been on the campaign trail reinforcing the idea that the president lied to the public and has been derelict in his duty in their casting of this to protect Americans. To Sahil's point, it is disingenuous for the president to continue to spin this and say that he didn't want to alarm people because it is curious that he would say that, about a public health crisis, but somehow rioting and looting happening during overwhelmingly peaceful protests or the specter of non-existent voter fraud or the disappearance of the suburbs are worthy of alarm in this campaign season.
We're talking all about the presidential election, which, of course, makes sense because it's coming up in 7.5 weeks. But there are politics going on right now that affect people right now. And I'm thinking of pandemic relief. The Congress has not been able to reach a deal on this. Republican senators failed to pass their so-called skinny pandemic relief package this week. There are, millions of Americans who are unemployed, no fault of their own, and they don't have the extra money coming in to make ends meet. Aaron, is it really possible that Congress is going to allow the next couple of months to go by before the election and not pass anything to help people?
And not only is it possible, but it is looking likely in this continuously polarized Congress that can't seem to find a solution, even in the midst of a pandemic that is affecting everybody. I mean, this the fact that they could not come up with a deal is striking, given that this really is about those of us who are living with coronavirus, right? The tens of millions of Americans who are affected by this pandemic, whether they or anyone they know ever gets sick or not. The recovery around this economy is tenuous, fragile, or just simply not happening for millions of Americans. And that was something that was really kind of brought into sharp relief this week. Coming out of Labor Day, you had millions of parents, children, and staff at schools across the country who returned to class either virtually or in person. People are looking for their elected officials to respond to this pandemic. That includes members of Congress. The unemployment numbers were unchanged from a week ago. But part of those pre-pandemic claims, the increase in that could be parents who can't go back to work because schools are closed.
Sahil, speaking of money, there are reports coming out that the Trump campaign is running out of money, that they pulled in $150 million less in the month of August than the Biden campaign did. What do you read into all that?
Well, the Trump campaign raised $210 million in August, which is far behind Joe Biden's sum of $365 million raised in the same month. And I think that's one of the reasons we see a mismatch of on-air activity between the two campaigns. Joe Biden's campaign is outspending Trump on TV ads in key swing states like Michigan and Pennsylvania and Florida, states that President Trump really needs to win if he's going to secure another 4 years. These are the states that are probably going to decide who the next president is. And I think we could read into this that if you're a Democrat, running against President Trump is a pretty good fundraising pitch. And Joe Biden has been very successful at raising money as part of his message that wherever you are, wherever you stand on the issues, whatever your ideology is, first thing that Democrats need to do is get President Trump out of office.
That is Sahil Kapoor, national political reporter at NBC, and Aaron Haynes, editor-at-large of The 19th. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.